one communist on the faculty of one university is one communist too many. One communist among the American advisors at Yalta was one communist too many. And even if there were only one communist in the State Department, even if there were only one communist in the State Department, that would still be one communist too many.
Welcome back, my friends, to the circle jerk that never ends. We are TRS.biz. And this is The Daily Showa.
This is The Daily Showa.
Joining me this week on the death panel, Mr. Michael Enoch.
Hey, what's up?
The Grand Wizard, Alexander McNabb.
Chicken!
The one and only ghoul.
How are you doing?
And, of course, our old friend Bulbasaur.
Ooga booga.
Ooga booga is right. So, is everyone enjoying their barbecues and their beers today? It's Labor Day. Celebrate the proletariat.
And celebrating the 40-hour work week.
There you go.
Free healthcare.
There you go. That's what labor's all about. That's America right there. So, believe it or not, we actually do like a little bit of show prep around here once in a while. And I did some. I actually was looking for some kind of bombastic way we could talk about the commie roots of Labor Day and whatever. And I ended up on probably what's the most boring site on the web. I was at about.com. I ended up on about.com and for some reason read this bland, terrible, goddamn article about Labor Day and where it came from. And it was so shitty. And eventually you get to the final paragraph of it, and just, here comes
bullshit.
Your curveball bullshit. I mean, it's just, it won't go away. It's and I quote, "As this last century ended, unionism, with its long and hard-won history, in the fight for acceptable working conditions, pay and benefits, was on the decline. A thriving U.S. economy, which believes that big business and capital power are the surest advisors in running of the country, has largely bypassed the massed force of the once powerful unions. Might it not be suitable for us to pause today to think how far the old union activities have brought us in improving life for the common man? And we might think soberly for a minute about Labor Day as a memorial to the vanished men and women of the 19th century who gave us the economic base for our working men and women enjoy.
Oh my God.
This is a time to visit distant family, to take vacation trips to resorts, to spend money freely and fully enjoy the prized days of this grand holiday weekend." That, folks, is what Labor Day is all about.
It's like fucking Christmas.
Commie Christmas. It's like I'm in the lamest source for information possible, about.com, and there's that just nugget of just beautiful bias and just presented as objective. I don't know what else to say about it. There it is.
Yeah, they say nothing about like the Haymarket Massacre.
No.
They don't talk about any of the stuff that precipitated. Okay, whatever.
I mean, we could. I don't know if we, I mean, we wanted to talk about communism. I don't know if we want to veer off into the topic of why the myth of trade unionism being what, like, this is a classic thing when you talk to liberals too. Like, the myth of trade unionism as being what brought acceptable working conditions and the end of child labor and all that. Like, just because we had unions, that's why you have a 40-day work week. That's why you have no child labor.
But that's true, though. I've seen all these internet memes about this. It's got to be true.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's what they tell you, even though, you know, with union activity almost completely gone and really only isolated to the public sector, where they can essentially hold the legislature hostage for pensions and higher pay and benefits.
But
that's like the only place it's still viable. Of course,
well, you know they're working to get us a living wage.
Yeah. And the decline of unions is why we don't have a thriving middle class, right?
Right, yeah. Because the middle class has shrunk so much.
Yeah.
What the fuck is a living wage? Is that, I mean, because people can live fine off of minimum wage, and they'll admit it, but it's like, it's more about, well, they should be able to have a big house and car. And
well, one individual can sustain themselves off minimum wage if they live within that means.
Yeah.
You can't have a family of four on a minimum wage. I think
they
define living wage as like enough to support a family of four at above poverty level. Poverty level
in Manhattan.
Defined, yeah, right. In Manhattan, right? Yeah. Poverty level in that case, I'm don't have a living wage. But it's poverty level just being defined as always the bottom 20%. Of whatever the income distribution is, the bottom 20% is the poverty level.
If your flat screen is less than 42 inches wide,
you are in poverty.
It's an interesting word game, throwing the word living next to wage.
Right.
Plus, income inequality, you know, that's another go-to.
Oh, boy.
Right. I mean, we could dispel, I mean, I could go through and dispel all these popular myths about, you know, the economic state of things, increased living standards are created by greater productivity of labor, which is created by increase of capital relative to labor in the production process. This is pretty standard economics 101 stuff. So, like, the more you can produce with less work, because you have more capital, more machines, more whatever to work with, the higher the value of your labor, the higher your wage is.
Won't that displace the laborer?
It's government regulation and unions that are responsible for our increased living standards. Everybody knows this.
Of course.
That's what it is. And that's why if you go to Africa where they have no capital stock, no industrial base, and just put them in all of them in labor unions, that they will magically become middle class.
Imperialism.
In the third world. That's what needs to be done in the third world. We need to go to Africa. We need to organize the tribal people into labor unions. Exactly. And then they will be middle class, and they can get rid of poverty and child labor.
The international proletariat will save itself, which is just going to bring us to the meat of what we were going to talk about this week, is fucking commies, man.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what we're here to do. Fucking commies. So, I don't know where you want to go.
Hey, this guy's a commie!
There you go.
is that from Seinfeld?
No, I will plead the fifth on that one, like many commies before me.
Well, that's enough, Pinko. You're through.
I'm amazed if there's actually entertainment in the United States that would be critical of communism.
Oh, come on. That episode is not critical of communism. If anything, that episode is critical of McCarthy. So anyway, we don't really want to talk about Seinfeld, right? I'm just going to...
No, but I think that it's a good segue into...
Yeah.
What we do want to talk about, which is one of the biggest myths of the 20th century, if not the biggest, although I don't know if you could say what the biggest is. It's a big myth that's constantly perpetuated in our society, mainly through the entertainment medium, also through the schools and the universities, which is the myth that there ever was such a thing as the Hollywood blacklist, that there ever was some sort of organized cracking down on people that were in the entertainment industry. I mean, the entertainment industry, as we all know, is thoroughly infested. First of all, it's controlled. We all know it's controlled by Jews. I mean, that's like that. To even deny that is absurd. Yeah. And it's like heavily liberal, almost, you know, communist.
Very, very liberal, in terms if not of, commie Jews, exactly.
In terms of how the point of view that is portrayed. And the McCarthyism... The claim of McCarthyism, the claim of the Hollywood blacklist is bullshit. I mean, if you go back and look at what actually happened there was, whose actual careers were ruined. There were a few incidents, like I believe that the director Cecil B. DeMille wanted people that worked on his productions through the union, of course, the Screen Actors Guild union and all that stuff. He wanted them to sign a declaration that they weren't communists. And if they didn't, then he didn't want to work with them. So that's considered to be horribly oppressive. A stipulation of the contract is that you're not a communist.
And I have this woman, Norma Barsman. She says she's a blacklist survivor. She describes her life in exile in Paris as, we had dinner with Picasso every Tuesday night.
Oh!
When we were at our country house.
Incredibly oppressed.
Yeah,
right.
She's incredibly oppressed in our country house. Yves Montan and, oh, I'm sorry, French names. I can't say them. Simone Signornet, Jacques Prévert. We're all friends. I'm sorry. I'm not even going to try to pronounce those. Yes. Plus, we got to work with all the amazing European directors, including Vittorio De Sica and Constantine Costa-Gavras. It was hard, but it was also the time of my life. That, my friends, is life under being blacklisted by Hollywood for being a commie.
And if I could just also add to that, I mean, I think there was, of course, the famous Hollywood 10 that went to jail, but
she was one of them, her husband was one of them.
Served less than a year each. Like, they barely, and they actually did commit perjury.
They did.
So the crime the crime was lying to Congress under oath, which they did.
They did a year for contempt, is what it was.
All of them did that. Okay, yeah. Everybody that was asked, are you a Communist Party member or are you a communist, they lied.
They lied or they pled the fifth.
And they didn't, and they lied under oath, so they all perjured themselves. Yep. Now, those 10 this is at the time when, you know, the Stalinist show trials were going on in Moscow, where the regime that they were loyal to was, like, summarily doing show trials and executing people. And another interesting thing is, I mean, a good case example of this, which I've actually done a little research on, is Sean Penn's father, Leo Penn.
I just pulled that up, yeah.
She was a diehard communist, and she was also a director. And he claims that he was a victim of the blacklist, but if you go to his IMDb page and you look at his work history, I don't see any gaps.
Some blacklists.
Like, there is no gap in the period of time that was supposed to be McCarthyism. He was still directing films and television shows throughout the 50s. There was no gap in his career.
There was another thing that happened with the Hollywood 10. There actually, when it first came up, there was like a group of big actors that like traveled to Washington to show moral support. And actually, they're like, we're talking Humphrey Bogart, Danny Kaye, Danny fucking Kaye, if you guys like National Lampoon's, Gene Kelly, they flew to Washington to support them, and their testimony was just so bonkers, off the walls, commie bullshit, that they actually all were just like so embarrassed, they just turned around and went back home.
that's actually pretty funny. Yeah, I mean, I love the hiding behind. Like, it's really funny to me that it's like communists, and then when you call them on it, it's like they hide behind all the things that they want to destroy, in order to protect themselves. So it's like, oh, well, you know, I'm an American. I have a right to my private opinion. And it's like, yeah, in America you do. But then your system, it's like irony and hypocrisy on like an unbelievable level. And the pretense that, oh, we could have communism and still have like freedom of speech. Yeah, there's no reason to believe that really at all.
Well, liberals do that. I mean, if they're faced with any sort of strong criticism of their own lifestyle, they immediately fall back on, it's like my privacy, man. And most of their arguments kind of come out to being like bitch hunts.
Are good people.
Does anyone remember that video where the college students were having some sort of communist meeting or something like that? And
yeah, and I linked it in my How to Left article.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, yeah. Well, can you go on and explain what happened in that video?
Yeah, there was some university, some open open forum thing. There was these groups of just commie leftists having some kind of conference, and it was open, as in anyone could walk in and sit down and listen if they wanted to. And this guy walks in, who I guess they all knew was really right-wing, and he brought a camera with him, and he sat down and just started recording. And he wasn't saying anything to anybody at all. He was just recording it because he just wanted to get it all on tape and then do whatever he wanted to do with it, because he was also it's some guy with a blog site or something. I don't know. But obviously wanted to analyze what they were saying and stuff. And after he sat down, immediately there was the dweebs that were hosting it were going to the cops right outside of the
conference,
saying like, you need to get him out of here, he's harassing, blah blah blah. And the cop pulls him aside and he says, well, why are they saying you're harassing them? It's like, because they don't want their shit to be out there for people to look at. and then
right.
The cop basically says, well, just don't harass them. He said, I won't say a word at all. I'm just going to sit there with the camera. And the cop then told everyone, like all the commies who were throwing a fit about him, basically said, he's just going to sit there. So just let him sit there because he can.
Because he can.
And it's funny, right? Because it's like, oh, okay, so a bunch of commies in a room and they want exclusive rights to that room. I mean, wouldn't it be great if there was some social construct, some sort of shared societal belief that we could have that would give certain people exclusive access to certain physical spaces? I mean, can you think of anything like that
that exists?
Well, as he walks back in the room, these stupid kids and for some reason some like old people that are just lost as fuck are just complaining to the cop, yelling about, like, and then they start like getting in this right-wing guy's face, slapping his camera and like crowding around him and stuff, and he's just sitting there with the camera not saying anything. He's just letting them like prove how fucking retarded they are, basically.
And of course, and then, what was their, you know, what their final solution was?
Yeah, what was the voodoo chanting? Yeah, the voodoo chanting they all go back to.
And shut it down! Shut it down!
I was hoping Jesse. Sorry,
I had to find my mouse.
I was hoping he was going to take.
So they all storm out and chanting, harassment isn't free speech. Harassment isn't free speech. And you're talking about free speech.
But assault is, right?
Harassment. You're talking about free speech, and you're at a copy cop. Well, that aside,
yeah,
he still never said anything. He just recorded them all as they're marching out, and then just went home and uploaded it. Like, look at these fucking idiots.
Even funnier was like that one bitch that was like, you know, it's particularly, you know, she was like, it's not just that we're left wing, but we're also young people of color, and like she was like highlighting, oh, we're particularly vulnerable groups because we're all like a bunch of middle class kids at college.
Bunch of slack-jawed faggots around here.
Hell yes, Predator.
So actually, as we started in this discussion, this shit is so ingrained in our culture is that we actually started this off with the fucking principal error that happens when you talk about McCarthyism. You brought up McCarthyism, and we're talking about fucking HUAC. The House Un-American Activities Committee. That was not McCarthy. That was in the House.
Right.
And this is what they do. They've blurred that line, the liberals. They've blurred it so well that even we, TRS, your fucking light in the darkness, made the error. I mean, I know, I'm not trying to call you out. I'm just saying it's so fucking pervasive that we even just did it. And it's one of the things I was reading. There was at one point, the New York Times in their crossword puzzle, they had a hint I mean, this is like a small potato, whatever, but it just shows how shitty it is. It's like they had a hint in their crossword that was Joe McCarthy's group, and the answer was HUAC.
That's fucking stupid.
And it's like, but it took 3 weeks of somebody hounding them to print the retraction, because I don't know why you want to go after it.
I mean, arguably, though, when they talk about McCarthyism.
Well, yeah, they've turned it into...
They don't mean specifically things that Joseph McCarthy did. They mean the general climate of... Supposedly, the general climate of fear created by supposed witch hunting. It's absurd to even talk about it because it's supposed to never even happen that it's... But yeah, I mean, you could... I think we can use the term McCarthyism as an all-embracing term for what they're talking about when they complain about their imaginary idea of a culture of fear that was created around people being communists for like a couple of years in the 1950s that today is even still used as a synonym for any kind of like witch hunting behavior, which is, of course, we all know that they do retarded. Like way more and like to a much more significant degree that actually creates
rich wine
consequences for the people that they attack. Like they create much more significant consequences for people that they attack than HUAC or Joseph McCarthy or any of that ever created for a few wealthy leftists in the United States in the 50s. And it's funny that it's always bitched about. And the reason is because it was actually targeting or went after exactly the class of people that make up elite institutions now. So it went after intellectuals, it went after the media, because they're all a bunch of fucking reds, and, you know, so it's not that, they're targeting, like, the poor, or the black, or the homos, or whatever the typical victim groups are. It actually went after the actual class of people that create the intellectual atmosphere in the country now. And that's why that it is like the greatest sin ever. Joseph McCarthy is the devil to these people.
He's the devil because...
And all he did was call a commie a fucking commie. And there's a great quote from him that's an awesome quote from him where he actually says it like McCarthyism, all McCarthyism means is calling a person a communist that later turns out to be a communist.
That's exactly right. Completely vindicated. All the bullshit. I mean, they made a movie about him where they basically slammed
him. They've made multiple movies about it.
And there was a movie with something about, like, he gets the idea of 57 names from a fucking Heinz ketchup bottle or something.
That was, that was the Manchurian Candidate.
Yeah, and it's just...
Which is, yeah.
And the Venona cables, when they were declassified and made public, I mean, he was completely vindicated. Everyone... just about everyone that he had on his little list was actually some kind of on the Soviet payroll in one way or another, and they were working in the federal government. That's who he went after. Like, that's the thing. Like, McCarthy, he didn't go after Hollywood.
Yeah, that was HUAC.
Yeah, he went after people who were federal employees and federal appointees in all levels of our government who were actually on Stalin's fucking payroll. And it was true. It was all true. And
Have you ever seen the stuff? This kind of wants to bring us into like Whitaker Chambers.
Yeah.
Have you ever seen the website that they have, kind of a supporting Alger Hiss and all the nasty shit they say about Chambers, that he was a closet homosexual and was in love with Hiss, and
that's empowering, though. Even if he was, who cares?
Well, yeah.
I mean, that's irrelevant to the facts.
That Hiss was a fucking commie.
Chambers was a commie until he understood. He came to understand what that meant, and if anyone reads Witness, it's one of the greatest books I've ever read. And he's an amazing writer, and the amount of searching of his own soul that he did in order to understand why he was a communist and why people become communists and what communism means is really one of the most moving. I'll confess, I broke down into tears several times reading the book. I mean, it's an amazing book.
Oh, wait, am I supposed to make fun of you there?
Bunch of slap-jawed faggots around here.
There you go.
Yeah,
I already used that one, though. It's no fun.
You can make fun of me. You can make fun of me for that.
No, dude, I feel you. I cried manly tears over it, too.
Yeah.
That's the whole thing, though. On top of everything that he kind of while he's bearing his soul, he also goes into what he did when he was working for the Soviet underground, the people he was working with, you know, like Dexter White and Alger Hiss, and he just starts going through these names and what they were doing and how Nixon and all of the whole investigation, how it went down, how Hiss tried to defend himself and how Hiss perjured himself, how the evidence just basically outed him as a fucking commie. The thing that infuriates me the most is you can look up, and I forget the Wikipedia article, but it shows that the state of Massachusetts disbarred Alger Hiss, but later reinstated him. And then the next paragraph, it talks about how it disbarred Richard Nixon for his Watergate scandal and never reinstated him. And it's like, so the state of Massachusetts considers what Nixon wiretapping the frickin' Democrats as worse than wanting to turn the country into a satellite for the Soviet Union. Are you serious? Like, I mean, the entire state needs to go into the oven over that.
He committed actual treason.
Yes,
absolutely.
Like, Nixon broke law, like United States law. There's no question.
Yeah, Nixon, it was illegal campaigning, basically. I mean,
yeah, but it was a minor. I mean, they broke in. They committed felony. You know, breaking and entering and robbery. I mean, no question
the
about
that.
The
security of the nation wasn't fucking threatened by what he did.
But that's not, like, Hiss should have been fucking executed.
Yes.
Like, he gave national, like, documents with implications for national security to a foreign power. He should have been shot.
Yeah.
Like, there's really no other way about it. And they put him in jail for a couple years. Like 4 years, I think, in the end.
Oh my God.
4 or 5 years he served time. And then there's a massive media campaign. I mean, it's not so much now, because it's obscure now. Most people don't even know about the case. I mean, people our age actually probably are completely ignorant of it.
Yes.
People from that time, liberals from that time, though, still...
They know to knee-jerk defend him when it comes up if something happens.
What I find so interesting about this is something that I notice with communists in general, or people that lean communist but don't necessarily know it. It's just because their turn of mind is that way. Is that they deny it. So, like, why would, if Hiss is a communist, he believes in the ideals of communism, he believes in the ideals of the USSR, everything that goes along with that, why do they deny it? Why, when said, you're a communist, do you deny it? Why, when you try to pin a present-day liberal down on what they actually think, do they deny being a communist? And I actually don't know the answer to that. I think maybe somewhere subconsciously they know that it's not viable. They know that it can't work, that it's just a pipe dream, that it's just their own moral projection onto the rest of society, that it's something about it, they deny it, and I don't know why.
And it's very interesting. You know, you read some of the older writings from, say, a liberal that leans communist, and you see that. Like, they constantly want to fall back. It's like they go back and forth. You know, they're going into the materialism, the historical narrative, the class consciousness, and then they'll fall right back into moralism. They'll start kind of evoking original sin, original innocence, paradise, and it's like reading it. They don't even understand that they're doing it. I think it's a very disjointed, very schizophrenic kind of thing.
I mean, I think that it's entirely possible that many people that would go before HUAC and would say, I'm not a communist, in their own hearts thought they were telling the truth.
Yeah.
So they would go to a meeting, a Communist Party meeting, and then they could go and say, I'm not a communist. And they could feel like they were telling the truth because they really just want to help the poor and the working class. You know, and it's very interesting to me that there's that sort of disconnect there.
That's the problem.
I agree.
It's pervasive to this day. Like, and that kind of goes into the white guilt thing. Like, I'm going to identify with this minority group that openly hates me, that openly wants to see me gutted on the street. I'm going to support ISIS. I'm going to support, you know, I'm going to support the Black Nationalists, the Black Panthers. Mm-hmm. I'm going to support the MS-13 types, the ones that won't to see me dead, but it doesn't conflict with anything. And that's the most bizarre thing.
It's basically they've got good intentions, and I would never really accuse leftists or liberals in general of not having good intentions. I mean, their heart is definitely in the right place there. It's just the consequences of their belief system, you know?
Yeah, they've completely disconnected their heart from their brain.
I would accuse them of not having good intentions. Yeah. I don't accuse them of having malicious intentions. I think that what they think is good is bad, though.
I've met quite a few with malicious intentions.
Yeah.
Will open.
I think increasingly
when you strip it all down and let them.
If you push,
point out
you
that
push,
their views are basically self-destructive to the West.
Narcissistic.
All. A common response would be, well, the West deserves to perish.
I've heard it, like, in person. Hold on. What was that, McNabb?
I don't think it's intentional for most of them, though. I mean, yeah, your extremists are obviously going to be more anti-Eurocentric or whatever the favored social justice term of the day is. But your typical average garden variety leftist, you know, they do genuinely think that they're helping the poor or whatever.
But the thing is that I've noticed, and I'm sure we've all noticed it, if you push them long and far and hard enough, they eventually come to this real, really disturbing kind of antinatalist, just this extremist hatred of all life.
Right, and that's, we've seen that. I mean, we know a few individuals, like the whole extinction meme, where what that comes out of what I think is originally this idealism, this egalitarian idealism, and then the realization that it's unviable in reality, and the demoralization of that actually turns them into extremely nasty, malicious people.
I would have to put a lot more thought into this to really maybe even write a very good article on it if there's merit to it. But I've often, the thoughts cross my mind here and there where I feel like the main emotional driving force behind modern leftism, probably the biggest emotional driving force, even greater than any kind of white guilt or anything, is probably actually just being afraid of death. How all of their positions are trying to establish social comforts, and most of them are more inclined to be vegans or vegetarians, and they just want to escape the idea that maybe life has no intrinsic value.
Well, they don't want to make the leap of having to give anything value. They just kind of want to just kind of assume that everything has an intrinsic value,
right? Yeah.
Because it's a lot more comfortable.
Yeah, I mean, I guess we're going to segue into discussion of whether, you know, modern leftism actually has the orthodox Marxist elements in terms of the economic structure, or if it's become more of a feel-good sort of thing.
I think they had to abandon the economic side of it because, I mean, labor theory is just full-on retard. Like, I mean, even a dogmatic Marxist would laugh at someone that tries to assert Marxist economics.
Yeah, I don't think that has a whole lot of popular support now. I don't think that most people are really...
The only time I've seen anyone support it was stupid nobody professors in stupid colleges. You know, it's irrelevant.
Yeah. There's a fringe of people that still support sort of not just orthodox Marxist economics, but sort of like old school ideas of building a proletarian vanguard and a class conscious party and all that. I mean, that's mostly been abandoned in favor of the more cultural Marxism, identity politics, and rent seeking, mainly because that, as just a personal strategy for a leftist, that works better. like they can use that as a way to get social prestige, social position, power, resources, etc. Like in the universities, and you can play white guilt, you can play identity politics games, you can play feminist standpoint theory, and you can get a socially prestigious position. You can be a professor, and you can have social comforts. You can have wealth, as opposed to saying, look, let's restructure industrial society for the state to be in control of production. Like, no one's going to say that anymore, with the exception of a few hardcore holdouts to classical Marxism. But I will say, though, that while the economics of it have been abandoned in favor of this identity politics stuff, liberals, and I'm not just talking about a few isolated intellectuals, I mean liberals as a broad group, people that vote Democrat, do not understand economics. They don't understand Marxist economics. They don't understand why it's wrong. But their tendencies would go in that direction, because if you were to ask anybody who is your average day-to-day Democratic Party voter, what sectors of the economy is it appropriate for the private sector to control? Like, can we have capitalism, free trade, a market that, you know, creates products, set prices, the whole thing? And they would not say, they would never say that, like, even if you were talking about like hamburgers and pizza, they would still find a way that the government should actually control that somehow. I mean, at most they'll grant you that, you know, you can have a private company, but it has to be thoroughly regulated with like some sort of oversight committee. So, yeah, while I do agree, yes, the economics have largely been abandoned, it's not because of any kind of rational thought process.
No.
It's not like they actually like, well, this doesn't work, so let's move on to this. Like, they just, was sort of
an, obviously. But have you seen, there's actually an article where a socialist was talking about the ghost of zombie Marx, and, you know, seeing these orthodox Marxists always trying to disrupt meetings, you know, with their tired, outdated bullshit about labor theory of value and other things like that. So even among socialists, being orthodox Marxist is basically being out of touch.
Right, because they disrupt the identity politics narrative, because they want it to go, and you even see some of this stuff where they talk about how white male Marxists want to come into our safe space politics meeting where we're bitching about our own little personal identity, and they want to make it about the working class as a whole, but that just means white males will be in charge, which of course, because white males will be in charge, but
And, you know, our mutual friend is like that. He's basically left flat-footed and out of touch because of his Marxist stance is so far back in history that
it's
not even relevant anymore.
Yeah, it's
right.
Most of the objections to capitalism, even way before Marx, talking, you know, ancient Greek philosophy, still makes the same mistake all the time, and it's that I don't know. They probably seemed like better objections in the past, before capitalism really started to be incredibly innovative through industrial revolution and modern technologies, etc. But, you know, like, the biggest objection I usually hear is this idea that in capitalism nobody is anything but a money maker. A musician doesn't try to make the best music, and a doctor doesn't try to make the best medicine, and a shoemaker doesn't try to make the best shoes. It rather, they come up with the formulas for what's going to reap them the most money, so all the shoes are going to be like low grade and shitty, and music's going to be shitty, and all this thing. It's like, that seems plausible within like that vacuum. But there's like competition.
Communist running propaganda.
Sorry.
But, you know, there's competition.
Yeah, and, well, that crops up everywhere. That sort of narrative of, oh, well, the mean old capitalist, he definitely screws himself in the end because he's using shoddy materials and it bites him in the ass.
Here's the funny thing about that. If you just try to make shitty shoes, no one's buying them. But, you know, in a environment where the state's controlling everything, you think they give a fuck if your shoes are shitty?
Right. At the same time, they're wanting to criticize bureaucracy for being ineffective, but apparently the communist or the capitalist is much more ineffective because, you know, it's not like he's trying to make a profit.
I don't know, guys. Volkswagens are pretty high quality.
Well, it's the classic thing that we
talk about. I may
want
to disagree with that.
I'm just kidding.
It's sort of the classic tactic where they make a materialistic complaint, and liberals are absolutely the worst at this, and other people do it too, other groups do it too. They make this materialistic complaint, like a complaint based in materialism, and then you respond to that by saying, well, capitalism actually is more materially productive. Like, you bitch that the workers are poor. You point out that they're richer under capitalism than any other system. And then suddenly it's like, well, it's really not about materialism. It's about, like, spiritual values. Like, capitalism destroys spiritual values. And it's like, it doesn't – if you're looking for capitalism to provide you spiritual values, go the fuck back to church.
And it shows the interesting mindset that they have. That really, it is all an emotional drive.
Inability to separate church and state, like that, like they are failures in such a profound sense. Like, they are out of touch with the founding of Western civilization. Like, they're that far backward.
It seems to me most of their objections are essentially of the Christian variety. You know, they don't like the moral outcomes of capitalism. They object to the unfairness of it, the inequality. There's the popular superstition that if you're wealthy, you're obviously a bad, evil, greedy person. I mean, that's all Christian narratives there. Those are all Christian paradigms.
Fit through the eye of a needle.
Exactly.
That's an interesting idea.
There's a very much of a projection of sort of a Puritan Protestant value system. I mean, the Puritan Protestants that came to the United States were ascetics in many senses of the word, and that sort of projection is projected onto capitalist society as, like, it's, you know, it's materialist, it cares for money, but that's, in reality, like, there's other things that drive people. Like, people aren't only motivated by money, and, you know, actual solid economic theory doesn't pretend that all a person is going to do is adjust their behavior towards making the most money, or that there's necessarily a conflict between making money and also providing real value.
Well, I mean, for me, I would say that the problem goes back to, like, just determinism. Like, most of this shit, even the ones that ostensibly say they're, like, for free will, that they believe that we all have agency and blah, 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 you start pushing them, and then they start pulling these deterministic arguments. Like, they sound like what you would typically criticize a Calvinist, like a vulgar Calvinistic kind of argument. Like, I despise fucking determinism. Like, you can't – it just shuts – they use it – they wield it as a cudgel to shut down any sort of discussion. And I can't oven them fast enough. Like, exactly.
I mean, today we got a discussion and had to do with how there's an obesity epidemic, and this is actually the fault, believe it or not, of corporations with consumers on all of this really sugary food and all of these preservatives are in it. And this is actually some sort of conspiracy on the part of corporations. And
if the commies are going to get fatter, we literally are going to need bigger ovens.
People lack agency, and all they do is taste something delicious. I want more. Walk toward it, single file.
Yeah, I mean, this was
not my fault. You're like fucking that high time preference. Like, I mean, just be thankful that you don't have to spend your life as a peasant in the field. Just, you know, you're going to be hedonic treadmill's a thing. You're going to be this miserable in any system.
Yeah, people do get a lot thinner under communism, though. You can ask Ukrainians.
There's no jalapeno McDoubles in communism, motherfucker.
You wouldn't have as many GMOs in communism.
It is interesting how, though, you get this narrative of, oh, capitalism or, you know, it provides no spiritual value. Everybody becomes a cog in a wheel. And it's
you
just to produce money. And it's like, well, yeah, I mean, we could talk about that. But the funny thing is then, well, okay, what's the solution? The solution is to literally make everybody cogs in wheels for like, what the hell do you think a production system under, like, state centralized economy is? What, you think a worker has, like, some kind of individual identity? I mean, it's literally about destroying individual identity.
Do you have your social security number? I mean, what the fuck?
Talk about now I'm getting triggered. Okay, even with like feudalism, I mean, what was the peasant? What you had like with the aristocrats, you have like 500 guys that are like barely freaking educated, and you have 5 million that might be able to write their name. Okay, are they more individualized, or do they feel like they're individuals while they're farming fucking mud? Like, I don't get it. I just want to come through the screen and choke you and gouge your fucking eyes out. That makes no sense to me.
Yeah, no, there's really this romanticism of some kind of peasant lifestyle, which is funny because that's, you know, it's because of this, just you want to have it both ways. Like, you can't, like, you don't like the capitalist society because it's supposedly dehumanizing, but then you revert to systems that were completely dehumanized. I mean, at least, like, the amount of actual liberty and agency that people have to develop themselves as individuals in the West compared to, like, you know, the Soviet Union or, like, Cuba or, like, North Korea. I mean, if this is your complaint, I mean, it's absurd. It's absurd.
It's, yeah, but here's the thing, like, absurd.
Mike is ignoring the fact that our white supremacist patriarchal culture, it's like this invisible structure that is basically oppressing everyone into these roles. So it's just like living underneath a fascist regime, really.
What I think is the funniest thing about that, like, there's no spiritual value in capitalism is ultimately that objection means, well, that's just something that just works. Like, we should try something more.
Let's try something that doesn't work, because that'll make us want to develop ourselves. Yeah.
Well, usually it's just a confession that the individual you're talking to is suffering from ennui and doesn't know what to do about it. So, like, well, capitalism creates a spiritual malaise. It's like, well, maybe it's just you.
Maybe it's I've done plenty. I'm doing plenty fine spiritually. What's your fucking problem? Fucking die. I fucking hate you.
Yeah, I mean, it is, it's funny. It's like, capitalism doesn't provide enough material welfare. Well, oh, it does. Well, it doesn't provide enough spiritual welfare. Well, you think communism did? You really think so? You really think the USSR had an active spiritual
Well, if you look at the posters and look at the YouTube videos with the nice music.
Oh, but their propaganda was inspiring. Great. Yeah,
the communist regimes banned spiritualism and religion to a large extent.
Yeah,
back when they were in the field, you know, picking cotton, you know, they were singing spiritual songs. They weren't singing rap songs. I mean, that's definitely proof that we need to go back to some sort of feudalistic society. So feudalistic agrarianism, it will lift all ships.
Yeah, but I mean, they're not talking about spiritualism in the Christian sense like that. I mean, they're talking about some sort of new age life fulfillment, you know, purpose kind of thing.
That's which is funny because that's it depends on who you're talking to, but that whole idea of, like, everybody deserves this spiritualism, this, like, everyone deserves this individual fulfillment, right? Like, they're asking for actual, like, spiritual welfare. Like, it's not just, like, the material welfare. Like, they want the spiritual welfare as well. And because you get some alienated individuals that maybe see Stalinist propaganda and, like, well, that looks manly. That looks inspiring. Like, look, it's the smiling guy with the children around him, and the fields are rich with, you know, these sweeping grain fields, you know, and the sun is rising. It's like, you got to be kidding me. Like, that's state propaganda, bro. I mean, whatever. Like, you want to fall for the commie propaganda? I mean, you could theoretically, from the outside, look at United States government propaganda and believe that this that this was like accurately representative of the society. Like, so in United States government propaganda, it's like we have like freedom and liberty and racial harmony and really awesome jet planes and like you know what I mean, like. What?
Yeah.
You know, it's like looking at that from the outside and being like, well, wow, everybody in the United States looks like they've got a multiracial, harmonious society with awesome airplanes. Like, what are you kidding me? Like,
yeah, I mean, the grass is always greener on the other side.
Right, which is a common white state of mind. In an alternate universe somewhere where...
The Venus Project worked.
where liberalism is unapologetically and in charge, while not pretending that they're not in charge.
Oh.
All of the leftists and or powerful leftist voices in the alternate universe are all conservative.
You know, let's bring it back. You know, we were talking about. Dexter White and Alger Hiss.
Oh, McCarthy.
And they were talking about, oh, well, it's only... Some of them will say, oh, it's only a couple of government officials. And they went way overboard
there were
with
hundreds.
Their McCarthyism. You know, didn't someone get the documents? Aren't they now declassified, showing
yes, in the 90s, the Venona cables... we had a program running... I don't remember what department. They had cracked the Soviet code for their cable communications.
It was the NSA.
Was it the NSA?
I believe it was the NSA, yes.
Well, good. They're forgiven for listening to my phone calls then. there was a program to decode or to crack their code, and they were able to listen in on all the communications going from Moscow to Washington and all their agents. And the best part of this program was that it was without the president's knowledge. They did it because they thought that the president would be too wishy-washy on it, which is the understatement of the 20th century, that FDR and Truman might be uncomfortable with cracking the Soviet communications codes. And basically, that's what McCarthy was working off of. He had all these, and it was all classified because we didn't want the Soviets to know that we had cracked their code.
Right.
Because if they know that you've cracked their code, they're going to change their fucking code. This is another thing that liberals don't get, is anytime we have intelligence, it's like everything with Iraq, 9/11, all this stuff, it's like you... Or the Gitmo detainee.
We need more transparency.
Yeah, the Gitmo detainee is like, you don't give up your fucking evidence because
right. The
bad guys are going to be able to tell how you got it.
Mm-hmm.
So they had that program running without FDR's knowledge, without Truman's knowledge, and they caught all these guys. And McCarthy had his 130-some-odd names, and lo and behold, the Venona cables, when they were declassified in the mid-90s at some point, I think it was 96, maybe 94, I don't remember. You know, there were a list of 133 names of federal government employees who were...
What's the biggest names?
Oh, why do you got to go and do that to me? Jesus.
Well,
Harry Dexter White...
Some of them. Harry Dexter White, who was, I believe, the assistant secretary to the
Treasury,
Alger Hiss, who was the deputy secretary of state.
And these people weren't just like... minor official.
No, not at all. I have everybody's favorite conservative commentator. I have a quote here that she wrote out, Ann Coulter. Not rustling at all. She wrote a little bit in one of her books where she claims that these people were so high up that had FDR died a year earlier than he did, the Soviet Union would have had total control over the American administration. She says her scenario that she brings up is Henry Wallace would have been president. Okay, he would have moved up from, obviously, in FDR's death. And he would have most likely promoted Harry Dexter White to actual Treasury Secretary. And goddamn Alger Hiss would have been moved up to Secretary of State.
Oh,
that's yeah. Game over, man. I mean, you have a Soviet agent as Secretary of State.
Right. I mean, he already was assistant to the Secretary of the State, basically being groomed to be Secretary of State and potentially even president.
Yeah.
Right. So, like, and he was not, and he wasn't just like a fellow traveler, like a pinko liberal. He was
an agent. Spy. He was a spy. Yeah.
And so was Harry Dexter White. It's not like, oh, we're just sympathetic. No,
they were spies.
These people are traitors and spies. Both of them should have been shot.
And these liberal leaders, the Democrat leaders, Truman, everybody, were so either in denial or, I mean, I hate
to
be a conspirator.
Didn't FDR's name show up?
Yes, he had, what was it, codename Captain? Or something like that was in there?
Captain was his codename because they actually weren't sure. The intelligence service was not sure that they could trust him. They actually thought he might himself be a Stalinist agent. I don't think he actually was. I think he was just sympathetic and therefore did not have the ability or the will to weed out people in his administration.
That he called Stalin Uncle Joe. I mean, that's so fucked up.
Yeah, he's a turd.
I mean, he's definitely sympathetic.
Look at his family life. Look at his wife. You know, she was disgusting.
No, thank you. I don't want to look at her.
Yeah.
I mean,
I'm
looking at a list here, and it's just amazing. Victor Perlo, Chief Aviation Secretary for the War Production Board.
Jesus
Harold
Christ.
Glasser, Director, Division of Monetary Research, United States Department of Treasury. Alger Hiss, Director of Special Political Affairs, United States Department of State. Charles Kramer, Senate Subcommittee on War Mobilization Relations Board. Harry Magdoff, Statistical Division of War Production Board. Office of Emergency Management, Alan Rosenberg, Board of Economic Warfare, and of course Julius and Ethel Rosenberg.
Oh,
I don't
God.
Know if related.
Their husband and wife.
Manhattan Project. Husband and wife actually gave the whole reason the Soviets ever got nukes was because of them. Those are people that were just in one cell that was around the State Department and apparently the Defense Department as well.
And
that
these
was
people,
called the Perlo Group, Rosenberg Ring. Joel Barr.
Now, keep in mind, these people are all working for the federal government.
Look, I mean, I keep going. You're going to notice a certain pattern in these people's last names. I mean, maybe I'm just a racist. Maybe I'm just, you know. But
that'll bring us to a segment on the program that's coming up. We're not there yet. We'll get to that.
It's something you're going to notice as I listen. The Rosenberg Ring: Joel Barr, Abraham Brothman, Klaus Fuchs, Vivian Glassman, Harry Gold, David Greenglass, Ruth Greenglass, Miriam Moskowitz, Abraham Brothman, William Pearl, Mark Horton Sobel, Ethel Rosenberg, Julius Rosenberg. Yeah, okay, the Silvermaster Group. Nathan Gregory Silvermaster, Chief Planning Technician, Procurement Division, United States
Shekel
Department
King.
Of Treasury. it's really funny.
Jew name ever. Yes. Silvermaster.
Who could be
Dude, it's crazy. Helen Silvermaster, Shlomo Adler, United States Department of
Shlomo.
I mean, it's amazing. Bella Gold, Bureau of Agricultural Economics.
Shylock Kuykberg.
Wait, here we go. Sonia Steinman Gold, Division of Monetary Research, Irving Kaplan, George Silverman. I mean, it's insane. It's it's actually funny. I'll put the list.
Is this the Merchant Minute?
We're already doing it. Yeah. I'll put the link to this list up. It's on Wikipedia. This is all from those papers. Yeah.
And how this ties in is...
There's a few Anglo names, like one out of every 20, maybe, is like an Anglo name. But other than that, nope.
And this is the list that, you know, this is the famous list of names McCarthy had that he didn't want to give up. No matter what a liberal tells you that, oh, what's the soundbite I have here?
We need a name. Give us a name.
You know, they want, that's the Seinfeld bit, making fun of McCarthy, that they're saying he named names. And then he gave up all these people and had them. It's like he would bring up that he had a list of 100 some odd suspected.
And he actually had the list.
He had the list, but he didn't want to give the name in open session in the Senate because, oh, gee, innocent until proven guilty. He had these people were being investigated. They were suspected, but nobody was proven. And so McCarthy tried to go out of his way to refuse to give, you know, Welch and all these other senators, these Democrat senators who were just, it almost looks like if you go on YouTube, and I got a couple of links we're going to post on the blog to go with this podcast post. It's almost like the liberal Democrats up against him are almost, it seems like they're in the tank and they know he's right and they're just trying to do whatever they can to obstruct him, but they're demanding he name the names. And McCarthy is adamant that he will give the senators the names in closed session without the media so that they can see and so that people's reputations aren't destroyed by the accusation without having actual proof or convictions. And in the end, you know, they forced him to give these names up just so that they could say he named the names and what he did was so he was a bully. It's like he was trying to go out of his way to be like a typical stupid Republican would be these days, to try to play by the rules and not play
dirty. Try and play statesman when you're dealing
right.
with revolutionaries.
Right. So
you deal with revolutionaries in right. only one way.
And I have, you can take
them out and you fucking shoot them.
I have a bite right here I'd like to play of McCarthy where he's talking about the reason why he didn't give these names up is what he actually was naive enough. I mean, to me, it seems naive, where he didn't think that every Democrat in the country was a traitor. I have trouble with that idea, but I just want to play this. It's about a minute and a half. I'm just going to click on it and let it go. You can hear he's very sincere in this. And this is the mad dog in the Senate. This is the evil Joe McCarthy who named names and made accusations, baseless accusations.
Foaming at the mouth, evil, tyrannical Republicanism.
So just hear him in his own words here. Hang on a sec.
I think we should keep in mind when we refer to Democrats, when we refer to the administration, that there are definitely two groups of Democrats as of today. Number one, there are the millions of loyal Americans who have voted the Democrat tickets. Individuals who are just as loyal, who hate communism just as much, and love America just as much as the average Republican. That's one group. On the other hand, there is that small, closely knit group of administration Democrats who are now the complete prisoners and under the complete domination of the bureaucratic, communistic Frankenstein which they themselves have created. Ladies and gentlemen, they shouldn't be called that administration Democrat Party. To call them Democrats is an insult to the millions of loyal American Democrats. They shouldn't be called Democrats. They should be referred to properly as the Commie Crap Party.
Oh.
Yeah, I mean
there's your mad dog anti-communist right there.
There were some things about Joe McCarthy and his personal demeanor that were not, you know, maybe exactly, you know, perfect, but whatever. He was a human being. But it's interesting that they show that video of him saying he has this list, which he had. He did have.
He had the list.
And the people wanting him to show it and him saying, well, I'll show you in secret, that is shown as a way of implicating to make him look like a paranoid freak. And it's never brought up that he had this list, that he really had it, and that we now have it.
Right.
And that he was right, and he did have these names. And, you know, he did do some things like, you know, the whole his nickname Tail Gunner Joe, how he lied about his military service record. Like, he was never actually a tail gunner. But, you know, so he had his personal flaws and failings. But that doesn't mean that these particular accusations were wrong. And it's also just, it's just absurd. The idea that this was a climate of fear, the Red Terror, the Red Scare, that people's careers and lives were destroyed for suspicion. It's like, no, it just didn't happen.
It did not happen.
I talked about before the movie Good Night and Good Luck by George Clooney,
oh, Jesus,
where it's the profile of Edward R. Murrow, who was the top PBS announcer in the country at the time. So here you have, and who, like, dared? Oh, he was so fucking brave that he dared to challenge Joseph McCarthy. And it's like, no, dude, this guy had the nation's ear. He was the top broadcaster for PBS at a time when there was, like, two channels that people watched on TV. So he had a monopoly on the nation's television screens every night during his broadcast. And he used it for months and months to wage an attack against Joseph McCarthy when Joseph McCarthy was creating this climate of fear throughout the country. So it's absurd. It's absolutely absurd. And it's funny.
It's more the world's kind of shit.
When you watch Good Night and Good Luck, I mean, Good Night and Good Luck is meant to propagate this myth of McCarthyism, but if you watch it with a critical eye, knowing the actual history, it's funny what it actually reveals. Because it actually reveals that McCarthy was just a guy doing this, and it was just part of the political landscape of the time. It wasn't this climate of fear. It wasn't this Red Scare. It wasn't ordinary people were worried that they were going to get fired from their job. Their livelihood was going to be ruined for no reason at all.
Ordinary, they were going to come under suspicion. Ordinary people were cheering on Joe McCarthy.
Yeah, there was also
Good Night and Good Luck was a required watch in my middle school,
of course it was,
history class.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's history.
It's not actually a terrible movie, but it doesn't show what they wanted to show.
My history class was
that if you look at communist countries and the way that they treated, you know, counter-revolutionaries, as they were called, like in China, I mean, that was completely on a different scale than what happened in the United States.
I mean, not a single person was executed. Not a single person.
No. Just look at, like, the Cultural Revolution in China.
Oh, God.
Look at anything that's actually done when you put lefties in charge.
Right. Yep. Absolutely.
Yeah, look at how they treat look at how they treat contrary opinions. Compare it to
They cannot
into civility.
On this issue, and they cannot admit defeat. On this issue, they have been destroyed. The Venona cable, unless you're going to, the only thing they can fall back on is the Venona cables, you know, they were recorded in the same studio as the moon landing or something. You can only go conspiracy hard.
Yeah, you have to be a complete conspiracy.
The only thing you've got
now they can. Now what they can do is dismiss it as like, oh, well, that was just history. You know, it's not like it's not like the current administration has ever overreached and for instance, used a government agency to infringe upon the rights of people, you know, like the IRS and all that stuff. Like they don't do that. I mean, the Obama administration is completely objective. They don't try and infringe upon people's rights to have an opinion. It's not like people have a McCarthy-esque, like the way we say it. It's not like they try and crack down on contrary opinions and destroy the livelihoods of millionaires and ruin lives because they have an opinion that hurts butts. They don't do that.
No.
Not at all.
It's vanilla, though, compared to what actual communist countries did in the same situation. I mean, they literally fucking executed people.
Yeah.
Yeah, no trials, no nothing. I mean, they were showed.
Some people even, like, do modern lefts even try to actually deny that? Because often I hear them talk about, in the name of global warming, human population needs to be significantly reduced.
I actually saw a couple libs denying the death tolls in the Soviet Union and Mao's China with the same vehemence as you would see like a 1488er denying the Holocaust.
I've seen that same exact scenario play out.
Yep.
And they'll talk about like the Cultural Revolution and the deaths there were exaggerated, etc.
What's your source? That didn't happen. That's crazy. Where are the bodies? Da 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 da.
Yeah, those pictures from the killing fields, they probably just dug up a bunch of bodies and
it's so hilarious because if you suggest to them that any skepticism about the Shoah that would lose their minds, but they do this literally the same thing about the Gulag. It's crazy.
I think that, you know,
and you have the Cultural Revolution in China where if you're just accused of being a counter-revolutionary, typically by someone who was jockeying for political position, you would be shot.
You were done.
You were just done. That was it. There was no trial.
No.
Yeah, I mean, and I think that the Cultural Revolution was where I like the term struggle session came from. And where I get, it's like, and that's essentially what, like, debate.
That's the alternate title for the Daily Show, am I right? The weekly struggle session.
The struggle session.
Because, like, that's what, like, really debating a leftist is like, or what they want it to be like. And we've even, you know, come to this where, like, when we go into some of these leftist groups and start putting our opinions out there, and they start to leave, because once you have more than a few contrary opinions, they get very upset. It's because they want a struggle session. They don't want a debate. Like, they want the one conservative or the one right winger, the one whatever,
to just become exhausted from being beat up and just capitulate.
Be there as a target for their venting of their rage against whatever it is.
The Koch, and that's Koch, that's Koch what they brothers, want. Koch brothers, Koch.
Right? The Koch brothers, you know, the modern devils. And so yeah, and it's not even. I mean, we can even. It's one thing to compare the United States treatment of communist traitors, the incredible leniency of that, to Soviet Union basically executing people that were communists, just a little bit different flavor of communists from Stalin.
But I mean, they weren't even necessarily not communists. They were just accused of it by someone that had a grudge, you know, like
exactly. Because there's a reason why a leftist regime will always promote a paranoid psychopath to the top of power. Because of just how, I mean, you can see it when you see how leftists think, that they create a cult of personality around a psychopath. That's what happens.
Yes.
But in the United States itself, if we leave out foreign regimes, liberals now create a much more McCarthy-esque intellectual environment, according to what they say McCarthyism is, which it wasn't, but what they say it is exists far more with them in power. So you actually risk your livelihood. We saw it with Brendan Eich. He gave some money to a proposition, whatever it was, the anti-gay marriage, Prop 8, whatever the hell it was in California, I forget. He gave some money to that 10 years ago or so, and he had to be out of a job.
He invented Java, did he not? Or is it JavaScript or Java?
He invented JavaScript, which is the most used programming
everywhere.
Language in the world. All the fucking nigger tech that these leftists use is based on JavaScript, okay? I can tell you this from personal experience.
I mean, just the irony of them using JavaScript to post about this guy and complain about
it. It's like every app that they use to post about him use JavaScript, which is funny. I think there are other examples. The people that don't want to make cakes for a gay wedding, they need to not only be the Department of Justice is investigating them, but now they need to have re-education and sensitivity training. I mean, this is like insane shit. I mean, a guy who doesn't want to make a cake for somebody has to go to re-education training. I mean, think about that.
That's fucking so.
And these are the same people that complain about McCarthyism.
We're going to need a bigger oven.
That's what I have to say. There is that pretty funny video Ramsey Paul made about that very event. The Christian guy not wanting to make the wedding cake for the gay couple. When he's addressing leftists in the video and trying to get a response from them, and he says something along the lines of, what if he was like a Sunni Muslim or something?
Yeah, suddenly the objection would disappear. And I should also point out, that wasn't an isolated incident. There were a number of cases of that, and then now the most recent one is a couple that owns a farm that they would rent out for events. A lesbian couple wanted to use it
for
their wedding. Right. They neglected to rent out their property for the lesbian wedding, and now they are being fined and going to federal government.
We know who's behind all this, right? Is that a segue? Can we do this?
Yeah,
you know where this is going, right?
All right.
I think our old pal
is ready.
Pepper your anus. Our pal Marakiu is back this week with another. What we're gonna call? We changed the name. It's not. It's the Merchant Minute. Hang on.
Yeah.
Bite the pillow. This is the Merchant Minute. No longer content to orchestrate the events in Ferguson from the shadows as the distraction fades away, the Jews have sent a representative, Hedy Epstein, to be arrested at the protests while openly agitating for the destruction of the white race because 6 trillion.
I'm Jewish and I was born in Germany, so I think I can understand what it feels like to be an African-American in this country.
Epstein said, as if a bunch of fat red guards living on welfare from white people is the same as the story Jews tell themselves about lampshades and ovens and starvation and forced labor camps with gas showers. Why her, you ask? She supports Palestine. This will give the illusion of ideological division among the shekel clutcher elites. Those white nationalists who lack discernment may start to think the Hebe masters aren't so monolithic after all. In reality, she either genuinely supports Palestine and is an expendable tool of the Shylocks, or this is yet another clever ruse. In other news, journalist James Foley, a good goy opponent of the Assad regime and supporter of the rebels, was beheaded by ISIS scum with a British accent. So where does the Jew fit into this? Well, where do you think those ISIS videos got such great production values? ISIS is a creation of the Jew. They are useful idiots like the separatists in the shitty Star Wars prequels. Sunnis have a long history of being good goyim. They just slam planes into buildings and blow up restaurants every now and then. Congratulations! You now have the most nuanced view of geopolitics this side of the edgesphere. Go repeat everything I just told you at the bar and make some women wet. For therightstuff.biz, I'm Morak Yu, and this has been the Merchant Minute.
Okay. Okay, that was good.
This is the Daily Show.
And there it is. That's all you need to know, really. I mean, everything we discuss, it doesn't matter because that's who's in charge. Thanks a lot, Morak Yu. Thanks again to the death panel, and thanks to you, the listener. We know you're out there. We know you're triggered, and you love it. Join us again next week, where we have nothing planned and nothing prepared, but that won't matter. It'll be awesome anyway.
I'll have something for you.
There you go.
Stay tuned.
Always give your best. Never get discouraged. Never be petty. Always remember, others may hate you. Those who hate you don't win, unless you hate them. Adios. Then you destroy yourself.
Adios, buen mecanero. Adiós, la página que hoy día se cerró, se abre ya la historia como ráfagas de sol, justo en el umbral donde se encuentran los valientes, los que se atreven.